the National Gallery podcast.
Welcome to the first in our new series of monthly podcasts from the National Gallery London. I'm Miranda Hinckley, and over the next 15 minutes, I'll be bringing you news of the latest exhibitions, taking you for a behind-the-scenes glimpse of life in the gallery, and giving you a brief roundup of forthcoming events. Coming up, described as one of the most eagerly anticipated exhibitions of the arts calendar, we pay a visit to Velázquez, a collection of works by the great 17th century Spanish master that's already broken all box office records. And she made her living by being suspended by her teeth. I learn more about the extraordinary Miss Lala, the woman featured in the gallery's painting of the month. And open from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m, serving everything from Eggs Benedict to freshly churned ice cream, I'll be hearing about the culinary delights on offer at the all-new National Café. But first to Velázquez, considered by many to be one of the greatest painters of all time. The exhibition that's recently opened at the gallery brings together masterpieces by Velázquez from around the world. At the heart of the exhibition are the 9 paintings from the National Gallery London. You might be surprised to hear that it houses the largest collection of works by the master outside of the Prado in Madrid. There are 7 other pictures from the UK in the show, and yet this is the first major exhibition of Velázquez ever to be held in Britain. I'm joined here in the studio by our reporter Leah Caribbean, who comes hotfoot from the gallery. Leah, I have to ask, we've never had a big Velázquez show here before. Has it been worth the wait?
Absolutely. This is the most stunning exhibition, and it includes works that are drawn from throughout Velázquez's career, from the earliest pictures he painted as a teenager in Seville, right up to the 2 portraits of the royal children he painted in 1659, the year before he died.
I've mentioned the 9 pictures owned by the National here in London. I hear the show represents something of a coup for the gallery in terms of loans.
Yes, and this is really what makes it such an outstanding exhibition. Right from the outset, the gallery's curator, Dawson Carr, has been working in close collaboration with the Prado Museum, who are, if you like, the inheritors of Velázquez pictures from the Spanish Royal Collection. So there are substantial loans from the Prado, which in themselves will be amazing, but then there are also these very important loans from Vienna, which once was the eastern branch of the Habsburg family. So if you like, it's a sort of gathering of the clans. And also there are some paintings that either have very rarely been seen before, and one in particular, The Temptation of St. Thomas Aquinas, a very big picture, that has been housed in a monastery in Spain all these years and has hardly been seen at all. So a really once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see these works.
So this must have taken quite a few years to organise.
Well, actually, it really didn't. I mean, normally exhibitions, you're looking at least 5 years in the planning. But this happened within 3 years, which is just extraordinary, especially for such a major artist with such important works. So quite extraordinary from that point of view, too.
And what did you make of the show?
Well, there's so much to be got from this exhibition. But one of the themes that I think emerges right from the very start is the immense humanity of Velázquez as an observer of human life. And his, what I think appears to be entirely genuine, compassion for what you might call the outsiders of Spanish 17th century society. The first room of the exhibition, which is devoted to Velázquez's early years in his native Seville, has an extraordinary gathering of pictures that, instead of glorifying the great and the good of the city, show instead its kitchen maids, its street vendors like the water seller, a wonderful picture, and its tavern regulars. The works are known by the Spanish term bodegones, and I asked Dawson Carr, the curator of the exhibition, what this term meant.
The term bodegón is taken from a low-life eating establishment, a dive, and became the word that is used in Spanish for still life. And bodegones, when referring to a work of art, refer to usually figures and still life combined. In it, Velázquez is starting to probe the representation of the visual world in the most palpable way that he can. And from the beginning, there's extraordinary talent, there's extraordinary ability at rendering things. And in the beginning, actually, some of the things are better than the figures.
Anyone who sees these pictures will be bowled over by the still lifes he includes. The most amazing earthenware jugs and bowls and some gleaming fish on a plate. However, in the hands of other artists of Velázquez's day, the people in these kitchen and tavern scenes were often portrayed as figures of fun, weren't they, or moralised about. That's not the same here, though, is it?
The thing that Velazquez does with these bodegones that is unique is that he invests them with a sense of gravity, a sense of nobility. They're humble scenes, but there is this sense of seriousness, this gravity, this respect for the humble that is unique to him. He's not just interested in capturing the physical appearance of objects. He's also, from the beginning, he's probing what it means to be human, and seemingly for a young man with great understanding, extraordinary understanding for a teenager. I mean, think water cellar. Can you imagine doing that when you're a teenager? You can produce something like that. It's just beyond belief. And, you know, you can get lost between the water condensing on the jug from the coolness and the fig existing in the glass of water, optically, beautifully, beautifully captured. But it isn't ultimately the physical description, albeit brilliant, of that picture that really grabs you. It is this sense of mood, this gravity that comes along with this very simple act of selling a glass of water.
Dawson Carr, exhibition curator. So, Leah, does this interest in everyday figures continue through Velazquez's work?
Well, when Velazquez left Seville to join the royal household in Madrid, the rest of his career was largely devoted to painting portraits of the Spanish royal family, a number of extraordinary examples of which you can see in the exhibition. But he also painted some extremely searching portraits of the people who served them, including a number of the dwarves employed as entertainers. The show has two of these works, including Velazquez's depiction of Francisco Lezcano, who sits alone on a rock against a landscape background, and he's shown shuffling a pack of cards, and one of his short legs is stuck right out toward the viewer.
Leah spoke to Michael Shamash, a writer, researcher and campaigner on disability issues, who is also a person of restricted growth, to ask what he sees when he looks at the work.
It's a picture of someone who was occupying a more lowly position in the pecking order of courtly life. However, Velazquez's painterly skills illuminate this person. You have a face that has a life of its own, that you can see even with somebody who would be perceived now, and I wonder then, to have particular disadvantages. There is a sense actually emerging from that of a real dignity, of somebody who we're not gawping at, we're not staring at, but we're kind of understanding. We are equal to him, and I feel that Velazquez conveys that incredibly effectively.
And yet Velazquez isn't trying to flatter Francisco Lezcano in any way, is he? I mean, as a portrait, it's almost painfully honest. It's clear, for example, that Lezcano has a developmental disability. He has a twisted neck, and you can see he's obviously had a go at cutting his own fringe. Velazquez doesn't hide anything. How do you respond to that?
What makes these paintings, I think, so important, and for personal restricted growth myself, that seems to me so relevant, is that, on the one hand, we're not given an image that either sort of airbrushes out any aspect of their physical being, any aspect that possibly is a little complex for us to deal with. But at the same time, there is an immense humanity. The problem with paintings traditionally that have shown images of people of restricted growth with others is that what you do is you're trapped into looking at the relativity of scale. What these paintings do is, because they're separate, you see them on their own. They are people living in their own space. And you actually then have to interpret the art as images in their own right. And these are groups of people who historically have shown in context where you're meant to go, gosh, isn't that person small? Whereas here you're saying, gosh, isn't that art good? Isn't that painting complex? And isn't that image illuminating?
Leah will be returning to Velasquez in our next episode. If you want to see the exhibition for yourself, Velasquez runs upstairs in the main galleries until January the 21st. Tickets for timed entry can be purchased online at www.nationalgallery.org.uk or by telephone on 0870 906 3891. An audio guide featuring Dawson Carr accompanies the exhibition. And now an extraordinary black circus performer is the star of the National Gallery's Painting of the Month, a work by Impressionist Edgar Degas called Miss Lala at the Cirque Fernando. It was chosen to coincide with Black History Month. I went to the Sainsbury wing, where the painting currently hangs, to meet artist and regular lecturer at the National Gallery, Vicky Turnbull, to find out more about this unconventional choice of subject.
It's a painting of Miss Lala, who was a circus performer, an acrobat, doing a stunt which actually involved her being hoisted on a pulley to the ceiling while spinning. And the pulley was actually attached in her mouth, as opposed to anywhere, like around her waist. So it was actually a feat of strength as she held it in her jaw.
Do we know anything about Miss Lala, who she was?
She was born in 1858. We believe that she was christened Olga Kara. And we also know that she started performing at the age of 9. She would have been working in Germany, we know. We know she travelled to Paris. We know she travelled to London performing. So she was quite an independent woman. She had one stunt where she would have a bar in her mouth and she would hold a boy and then a woman and then a man. And they would all be doing trapeze acts on this bar. And she was completely just serene hanging there with this bar in her mouth and this incredible amount of weight on it. Another one where she had a cannon attached to her mouth. And even when it kind of fired, and obviously you can imagine the force of a cannonball kind of ripping through
just
the...
kicking back.
She was still quite happy. And so, in some ways as well, she's kind of miraculous. You don't really know... It's almost like... It's almost too amazing when you go to see circus performers and the things that they can do. She becomes a myth almost sometimes in the way that people have described her acts.
Does she appear in other works of art or literature, or was Degas the only person to paint her?
We do know that she's appeared in newspaper articles in London for when she was here, when people have described her in some detail. And we definitely know that Degas and his contemporaries were interested in the circus and were travelling to the circus and with performers, and also with other kind of aspects of maybe kind of the working class in and around France and Paris.
And one final question, Vicky. How do you feel about this painting personally? How does it make you feel to look at it?
I really love seeing this painting. I think the more I see it, the more I kind of fluctuate back and forth. And I often have this question to myself, am I Miss Lala? Is kind of the question, because you want to kind of identify with her. And I find there's so much strength. I almost sometimes see her as almost like an artist anyway. She's kind of doing the twirl, she's trying to entertain people, she's trying to get people to see her. And that's very much like almost as I see myself as an artist sometimes, and particularly as an educator when I'm talking to people about paintings. And so I would say, yes, I want to be Miss Lala. I love this Lala in this pose. And I think it's very important for me to be able to see her in this position and to see a black person in the permanent collection who is so powerful.
And you can see the wonderful Miss Lala for yourself as part of Manet to Picasso, an exciting new display of some of the best loved pictures in the gallery. It's on show until May 2007 and entrance is free. If Miss Lala's acrobatics leave you feeling a bit hungry, you'll only have a few steps to take to enjoy a slice of cosmopolitan cafe culture at the gallery's newly opened National Cafe. I spoke to the giant of the London restaurant scene who's behind the project. We're sitting in the dining rooms of the National Gallery with Oliver Payton, who looks after this restaurant and is also going to be in charge of the National Cafe, which is opening next week. Oliver, tell us about the opening. Who is this new cafe for?
Well, I think the wonderful thing about the National Cafe is, with the National Dining Rooms, it was the more fine dining end of what we do. Whereas with the cafe now, the opportunity is to offer something for everyone. So ultimately, there'll be three different choices when you come to the National Gallery. There'll be sandwiches, salads, quick light food at a reasonable price, and also you can sit down or you can take away. And there'll be a mid-price cafe, which interestingly is open at night, and I think that's the first time that's ever happened in the National Gallery. So you'll be able to just come in for a drink.
So tell us a bit about the food.
Well, I think it was important to us that, for example, you can go from an egg and cress sandwich, you know, for £1.50 to a, say, macaroni cheese or or National Catastrophe Ice Cream Sundae, you know. I mean, it's meant to be a bit of fun. I think the point about it, the point about the experience of coming to a gallery, I wanted to relate a lot of the food to the gallery. I wanted the cafe feels like it belongs to the gallery rather than some sort of bolt-on operation. I think that was very important to me. And I think it's very important to the gallery as well. I've always loved art. I've been brought up with art. And, I have this thing that I think people, given the galleries are free in this country, you know, if you go to Museum of Modern Art in New York, or you go to the Louvre, or you go to any of these other places, you queue for hours, and then you go pay $16 or 20 euros or 15 euros or whatever it is to get in. Here, you can just walk in off the street. And I think people in this country are absolutely extraordinarily lucky to be able to have that, and I think it's a very important part of our culture.
Can you sum up your personal philosophy on eating out, if you have such a thing?
I only create restaurants that I would go to. I think that's all I can do. I was brought up going to a place called Bewley's in Dublin, which is a Quaker cafe, and I have very fond memories of going in there and seeing lots of different people, seeing people reading poetry. And a lot of what David Collins and I have talked about in this design has been driven by both our experiences going to Bewley's when we were younger. I think with the cafe, I want there to be a sense of romance there. It's also important to me everybody's treated the same. I don't care whether you've got 10 chauffeurs outside and 10 bodyguards, or if you're coming in just for a cup of tea. I think galleries are very democratic places, and I want to sort of continue on that theme of democracy.
And if you take your MP3 player along to the new National Cafe and show them this podcast on the player, you can order a glass of wine and get another one free after 4 p.m. That offer runs until the end of November. And remember, if you're coming into the cafe after 6 p.m, please use the entrance in St Martin's Lane. Finally, our monthly roundup of events at the gallery. Marking the 100th anniversary of the death of Paul Cézanne, Cézanne in Britain gathers 40 outstanding works from British collections by this renowned and influential painter. Entrance is free, and the exhibition's on show at the Sunday Room until January 2007. And if we've whetted your appetite for Velázquez, a series of films, courses, lectures and evening events are taking place throughout the next few months in conjunction with the exhibition. Highlights include the Portrait of an Artist film season, exploring the influence of the great Spanish artist on cinema, and a special live reading of leading Spanish playwright Antonio Buero Vallejo's work, Las Meninas, a tribute to Velázquez's painting of the same name. That's taking place on the 15th and 18th of November in the Sainsbury Wing Theatre. It's free, but advance booking is recommended. Information on all these events and more can be found on the National Gallery's website, www.nationalgallery.org.uk. And that's the end of this month's National Gallery podcast. Join me again in our next episode, when we'll return to Velázquez to delve into the tight corsets and monster wigs of the Spanish royal court. Until then, goodbye.